made. The minute she put her eyes upon Amy, Meg became conscious that her own dress hadn't a Parisian air, that young Mrs. Moffat would be entirely eclipsed by young Mrs. Lawrence, and that her ladyship was altogether a most elegant and graceful woman. Jo thought, as she watched the pair, how well they looked together. I was right, and Laurie has found the beautiful, accomplished girl who will become his home better than clumsy old Jo, and be a pride, not a torment to him. Mrs. March and her husband smiled and nodded at each other with happy faces, for they saw that their youngest had done well, not only in worldly things, but the better wealth of love, confidence, and happiness. For Amy's face was full of the soft brightness which betokens a peaceful heart. Her voice had a new tenderness in it, and the cool, prim carriage was changed to a gentle dignity, both womanly and winning. No little affectations marred it, and the cordial sweetness of her manner was more charming than the new beauty or the old grace, for it stamped her at once with the unmistakable sign of the true gentlewoman she had hoped to become. "Love has done much for our little girl," said her mother softly. "She has had a good example before her all her life, my dear," Mr. March whispered back, with a loving look at the worn face and grey head beside him. Daisy found it impossible to keep her eyes off her pretty auntie, but attached herself like a lapdog to the wonderful chatelaine full of delightful charms. Demi paused to consider the new relationship before he compromised himself by the rash acceptance of a bribe, which took the tempting form of a family of wooden bears from Bern. A flank movement produced an unconditional surrender, however, for Laurie knew where to have him. "Young man, when I first had the honour of making your acquaintance, you hit me in the face. Now I demand the satisfaction of a gentleman." And with that the tall uncle proceeded to toss and tousle the small nephew in a way that damaged his philosophical dignity as much as it delighted his boyish soul. "Blessed if she ain't in silk from head to foot. Ain't it a relishin' sight to see her settin' there as fine as a fiddle, and hear folks callin' little Amy Miss Lawrence?" muttered old Hannah, who could not resist frequent peeks through the slide as she set the table in a most decidedly promiscuous manner. "Mercy on us, how they did talk! First one, then the other, then all burst out together, trying to tell the history of 3 years in half an hour. It was fortunate that tea was at hand, to produce a lull and provide refreshment, for they would have been hoarse and faint if they had gone on much longer. Such a happy procession as filed away into the little dining-room. Mr. March proudly escorted Mrs. Lawrence. Mrs. March as proudly leaned on the arm of my son. The old gentleman took Joe, with a whispered, "You must be my girl now," and a glance at the empty corner by the fire that made Joe whisper back with trembling lips, "I'll try to fill her place, sir." The twins pranced behind, feeling that the millennium was at hand, for everyone was so busy with the newcomers that they were left to revel at their own sweet will, and you may be sure they made the most of the opportunity. Didn't they steal sips of tea, stuff gingerbread ad libitum, get a hot biscuit apiece, and as a crowning trespass, didn't they each whisk a captivating little tart into their tiny pockets, there to stick and crumble treacherously, teaching them that both human nature and pastry are frail. Burdened with the guilty consciousness of these sequestered tarts, and fearing that Dodo's sharp eyes would pierce the thin disguise of cambric and merino which hid their booty, the little sinners attached themselves to Grandpa, who hadn't his spectacles on. Amy, who was handed about like refreshments, returned to the parlour on Father Lawrence's arm. The others paired off as before, and this arrangement left Jo companionless. She did not mind it at the minute, for she lingered to answer Hannah's eager inquiry. "Will Miss Amy ride in her coop and use all them lovely silver dishes that's stored away over yonder? Shouldn't wonder if she drove 6 white horses, 8 off gold plate, and wore diamonds and point lace every day. Teddy thinks nothing's too good for her," returned Jo with infinite satisfaction. "No more there is. Would you have hash or fish balls for breakfast?" asked Hannah, who wisely mingled poetry and prose. "I don't care." And Joe shut the door, feeling that food was an uncongenial topic just then. She stood a minute looking at the party vanishing above, and as Demi's short plaid legs toiled up the last stair, a sudden sense of loneliness came over her so strongly that she looked about her with dim eyes, as if to find something to lean upon. For even Teddy had deserted her. If she had known what birthday gift was coming every minute nearer and nearer, she would not have said to herself, "I'll weep a little when I go to bed. It won't do to be dismal now." Then she drew her hand over eyes, for one of her boyish habits was never to know where her handkerchief was, and had just managed to call up a smile when there came a knock at the porch door. She opened it with hospitable haste and started as if another ghost had come to surprise her, for there stood a tall, bearded gentleman, beaming on her from the darkness like a midnight sun.
"Oh, Mr. Bear, I am so glad to see you," cried Jo, with a clutch, as if she feared the night would swallow him up before she could get him in.
"And I to see you, Miss March. But no, you have a party." And the professor paused as the sound of voices and the tap of dancing feet came down to them.
"No, we haven't. Only the family. My sister and friends have just come home, and we're all very happy. Come in and make one of us."
Though a very social man, I think Mr. Bear would have gone decorously away and come back again another day. But how could he, when Joe shut the door behind him and bereft him of his hat? Perhaps her face had something to do with it, for she forgot to hide her joy at seeing him, and showed it with a frankness that proved irresistible to the solitary man, whose welcome far exceeded his boldest hopes.
"If I shall not be Monsieur de Trou, I will so gladly see them all."
"You have been ill, my friend?" He put the question abruptly, for as Joe hung up his coat, the light fell on her face, and he saw a change in it.
"Not ill, but tired and sorrowful. We have had trouble since I saw you last."
"Ah, yes, I know. My heart was sore for you when I heard that."
And he shook hands again, with such a sympathetic face that Joe felt as if no comfort could equal the look of the kind eyes, the grasp of the big warm hand.
"Father, mother, this is my friend, Professor Bear," she said, with a face and tone of such irrepressible pride and pleasure that she might as well have blown a trumpet and opened the door with a flourish.
If the stranger had had any doubts about his reception, they were set at rest in a minute by the cordial welcome he received. Everyone greeted him kindly, for Joe's sake at first, but very soon they liked him for his own. They could not help it, for he carried the talisman that opens all hearts, and these simple people warmed to him at once, feeling even the more friendly because he was poor. For poverty enriches those who live above it, and is a sure passport to truly hospitable spirits. Mr. Bear sat looking about him with the air of a traveller who knocks at a strange door, and when it opens, finds himself at home. The children went to him like bees to a honey pot, and establishing themselves on each knee, proceeded to captivate him by rifling his pockets, pulling his beard, and investigating his watch with juvenile audacity. The women telegraphed their approval to one another, and Mr. March, feeling that he had got a kindred spirit, opened his choicest stores for his guest's benefit, while Silent John listened and enjoyed the talk, but said not a word, and Mr. Lawrence found it impossible to go to sleep. If Joe had not been otherwise engaged, Laurie's behaviour would have amused her, for a faint twinge, not of jealousy, but something like suspicion, caused that gentleman to stand aloof at first, and observe the newcomer with brotherly circumspection. But it did not last long. He got interested in spite of himself, and before he knew it was drawn into the circle. For Mr. Bear talked well in this genial atmosphere, and did himself justice. He seldom spoke to Laurie, but he looked at him often, and a shadow would pass across his face, as if regretting his own lost youth,
as he watched the young man in his prime. Then his eye would turn to Joe so wistfully that she would have surely answered the mute inquiry if she had seen it.